Take a unique look at the National Football League with Pro Football View from the East, a program dedicated to bringing listeners in-depth coverage on all 32 teams. Join host Joe Tufaro, a lifelong Giants fan, and Dennis Agapito, a die-hard Jets fan, as they offer up hard-hitting opinions and analysis on the NFL from a New York perspective. So, let's start the show. From the East, here's Joe and Dennis.
All right, folks. Well, we're going to get the show started once again. This is one of your hosts, Dennis Agapito, and thank you for joining us for another fantastic episode of Pro Football View from the East. And, of course, I'm joined by Mr. Joe Tufaro, who is the fan of the first place New York Giants. So, Joe, how are you doing today?
Good. We might have to put an asterisk next to that one after the effort we saw this week. Half the team's in first place. The offense is in first place. I'm not sure about that. How long it's gonna last? Except in that division, it might last a while. So, but anyway, I'm doing fine.
Yeah, you watch that game. It looked like a little bit of like Texas Tech against Oklahoma or something like that. It was the I was wondering if they were playing 11-on-7. So it was definitely a high scoring game. One that was more interesting, I guess, during the week. But we're gonna get into some injury news first before we kind of get into evaluating what happened during the week. Joe and I have decided that we need to kind of take a look at some of our teams that we picked, especially me. So I definitely need to take a look at some of the teams, some of my sleeper teams. They were called sleeper teams for a reason because they're sleeping, but we're going to get into some injury news. Yeah. Yes. So the San Diego Chargers, we won't mention them anymore. We're going to just kind of start off a little bit of injury news because there were a lot of major injuries this week. And, you know, injuries are always a part of football. They change the landscape. Every team deals with them. But a couple of big names went down. First guy I want to bring up, Joe, is Le'Veon Bell, the very talented running back for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, they get Ben Roethlisberger back, and they're playing a big game against the first-place Cincinnati Bengals, who beat them, the Bengals, and remain undefeated. So they've taken a stranglehold on that division. But, you know, Le'Veon Bell, he's out with the knee, and now I guess D'Angelo Williams have to carry the load.
Yeah, and that's a tough ask. You know, he's definitely, at this point in his career, he's the other guy to come in as a change of pace or to run out the fourth quarter or to do the stuff like that. So they're going to have to – and I never put it past the Steelers and Mike Tomlin to find somebody. You know, they have found guys in the past that have come out of nowhere. Some guys named like Le'Veon Bell, who just showed up out of nowhere and became the star of the league. So, you know, see where they go from here. But it's tough. You know, you get your quarterback back and then you lose your running back. So it's going to be a struggle for them.
Yeah, and they lost a tight one there to Cincinnati. What was it, 16-10? And that was a big game. They sit at 4-4. Again, they kind of have weathered the storm a little bit without Roethlisberger. We'll see how they do down the stretch. But another big injury for a team that's kind of out of it. They're 2-6, but they're hurting a wide receiver as it was. Breshad Perriman, their first round pick, I really don't know how much he's played, if at all. I mean, not really a factor, and he was supposed to be. But Steven Smith, the veteran, who had claimed this was his last year, he tore his Achilles in the game last week against the San Diego Chargers. He's done for the year. Is he done for his career? And there's little rumblings of maybe, maybe not, but certainly a team that wasn't in great shape to begin with at the wide receiver position or record-wise is now even in a more precarious position.
Yeah, and again, we buried Baltimore a while ago, and I think with good reason, especially in the division. You know, we'll start looking at some wild card things because someone's going to have to come out of there. I think that, you know, most of the AFC, the two AFC, one, two, actually three AFC divisions are pretty much decided. So you're going to have to start looking at wild card races, and, you know, they may still be in there. But that's a huge blow because he's the only guy they had to throw to. And I would say he's a free agent basically at the end of this season, right, Dennis? Because that's why he's going to retire. He's the last year in his contract. So if he's able to come back as a free agent, you never know. He might come back and get an offer to play for somebody that makes sense, that makes him want to put the effort in. But we'll see about that. This might have been the last game he ever plays.
Yeah, and another injury. We'll get an injury in what's going on with the San Francisco 49ers. Now, here's another team that we actually were kind of right on earlier in the year, again, with all the stuff that went, the retirements and all the things that happened and the players getting suspended and Alden Smith off the team, all this stuff. But, you know, Reggie Bush, I wanted to get into this a little bit with you, Joe, because Reggie Bush gets pushed out of bounds in St. Louis and slips on where the turf kind of meets a concrete portion of the stadium and slips and tears up his knee, and now he's out for the season. And, you know, I know at MetLife Stadium where the Jets and Giants play, it's all turf everywhere. The sidelines all the way up to the wall is turf. And I just wonder how, you know, they could allow something like this to remain in place. I see this happen a lot, Joe, in a lot of different venues, whether it's college or whatever, where they have these tarps and stuff and the player runs off the grass or off the turf and they slip. And you always just kind of wonder, you would think that by now these teams would realize, hey, we got to put down a surface that is somewhat consistent if a player goes off the playing field onto another type of surface and not get injured.
Yeah, I think it's one of those spots where the league is a little bit lax and probably leaves it up to the administration, you know, who's ever running the stadiums. And they probably should have somebody that goes and checks this stuff, because even a couple of years back, they had some issues where they allowed TV people to set up certain things. And I know one of the Giants wide receivers ran into him once, and one of their defensive backs ran into him once. And it's, you know, they just kind of leave it up to these guys that run the stadium sometimes, and they don't think about it. You know, he may have thought it was like a rubberized track, which you would think it would be by the color of what it was. And that's usually what's around the outside if there isn't turf. And it turns out it's cement, and just kind of, you know, it ended his season for sure. And, you know, hopefully not worse than that. But again, on a team that wasn't really going anywhere. So not that we don't care about the player, but not a major injury to them, because they were done anyway. So we'll see where that takes them.
Yeah, we're going to kind of go off the injuries for a minute. We'll come back to it, because I want to go on to this story here, which is in regarding the 49ers, which is now they finally benched Colin Kaepernick. I mean, they're a mess. They're not going anywhere. I guess, is it Blaine Gabbert's going to be playing the rest of the season? And Joe, one of the big reasons why they're benching him, besides the fact that he's been bad, is that a lot of his contract moving forward has injury guarantees in it. Very much like Robert Griffin III. His next year, his contract is $16 million guaranteed for injury only. That's why he's sitting on the side. So, I mean, I know the trade deadline's approaching, and his name has been floated around. I'll throw out a couple of names. Cutler's been floated around. Griffin has been floated around. Don't think any of these guys are going anywhere, but who knows? We still have some time before the trade deadline ends. But what about the benching of Kaepernick, and what do you think about his future there in San Francisco? Do you think that this is the end after this season, they part ways?
Well, I think you and I just became a lot smarter, Dennis, because you and I, years back, argued with the fact that, you know, Robert Griffin and Colin Kaepernick were the new face of the NFL, and this is how you were going to play, and these guys were, you know, they're putting these guys in the Hall of Fame, and it just doesn't translate. You know, they just weren't that good to begin with, and they were in some decent systems. They were better than the guys they were replacing at the time, but they just can't get it to work. It's their deliveries are bad. They're not pocket passers, which you need to be in this league and the way the rules are done. And I just, you know, like I said, you and I just became a little bit smarter by saying that this isn't the answer. Even Russell Wilson, you watch him play and you just shake your head sometimes. You know, he floats every ball that he throws. They happen to find some openings for him, but he's basically just a wildcat quarterback who can throw the ball occasionally, and it's just not going to translate into long term. You know, again, he was better than Alex Smith was when he got to San Francisco, and he was more dynamic. But again, it was more of the running aspect of it. It was more of some of his decision making. But again, he played at a small college. There's a reason why he wasn't, you know, at some big time school. There's a reason why he wasn't drafted very high. And all these things translate over time. It's, you know, we just watched the World Series, and you say guys become who they are over a long period of time. And the NFL takes a little bit longer because there's only 16 games a year. But it's just like watching somebody like who plays for the Mets and Cespedes. The guy's a lifetime 260 hitter. So when he bats 500 for a month, guess what's coming? He's going to bat 100 for a month coming up somewhere. And that's just how it works. and guys go back to their level at all times. And that's where these guys are now. They're secondary players in the market. And going back to, you know, trades, again, it's nice that ESPN can put up little blogs of trades we'd like to see and trades that make sense. But you know how difficult it is, Dennis, not only for salary cap reasons. You know, you can't trade for Jay Cutler. Who's got $16 million sitting around in their salary cap to take him on? And, you know, it's just impossible. And what are they going to ask for? They're going to ask for two number ones. And that's not worth it. He's not worth that at this point. But that's what happens with these guys is they, you know, you'll see somebody maybe for a seventh round pick or a fifth round pick, somebody who just needs to get off a team. But I really doubt you'll ever see Philip Rivers or Cutler or any of those guys ever in an in-season trade.
Yeah, and then again, we talked about Griffin and Kaepernick again with their injury concerns. It isn't even like you could take a flyer on a guy and say, I'll give you a fifth round pick. Give me his contract for this year. We'll move money around. But because then if you put that player in and they get hurt, you're on the hook for, I don't know what Kaepernick's exact number is, but it's a lot moving forward for injury. A lot. So that's why they're benching him. They don't need him getting hurt. And I know it's $16 million for Griffin next year. So before we get off the 49ers, let's just go into this quickly, Joe, and then we'll go back to the injuries. A trade that did take place to the Denver Broncos was the veteran tight end Vernon Davis going to Denver for a sixth-round pick. Denver gets Vernon Davis and the 49ers' seventh-round pick. In return, they get Denver gets the 49ers' sixth-round pick. And I believe, if I'm remembering correctly, if Vernon Davis goes to free agency in 2017, Denver will get their sixth-round pick back because kind of a strange setup here. Didn't really get much San Francisco, but you know what? Where are they going? Vernon Davis is a veteran. He wants to go to a contender. The Broncos could use some help at tight end. They're obviously contenders. They just really – I mean, we look at their defense, what they did to Aaron Rodgers. So, I mean, it kind of made sense from both parties to kind of part ways and move Vernon Davis on to Denver. But this is another weapon for Peyton Manning right now. And, again, the 49ers obviously are mailing in this season, and who knows what they're going to do moving forward. But they'll be looking for a quarterback after that much.
So what do the Broncos have to pay Vernon Davis this year?
I think they have to pay him a remainder of his $4 million salary, probably two and change, something like that.
What could they have paid to keep the other Thomas as their tight end, the one that went to Jacksonville?
Oh, he got a big-time contract from Jacksonville. I'd have to look it up, but he got a big-time deal. He got a big-time deal from Jacksonville. Jacksonville's got about $30 million in cap space. So, you know, if you give me a minute, I can look it up here real quick. But I know that Jacksonville, they had a ton of money. They had a ton of money, the Jaguars, and they gave him a big deal. Yeah, he got a five-year deal, $46 million with $24 million guaranteed. So, they weren't going to match that, you know, given the amount of money they have invested in.
And how's that working out for Jacksonville?
Well, yeah, Julius Thomas got hurt. But you know what? Again, the one thing about Jacksonville, because I know the Jets plan this week, is that they still have $33 million under the cap. They had money to spend. So it makes some sense for them. Maybe in the future they'll get more of a return on their investment. But I hear what you're saying. But right now, I mean, the Broncos, there was also some rumors, and I want to get into this quick, about Joe Thomas maybe going to the Broncos. We know they've had some issues. Ryan Clady's been out. Ty Zambrillo's been hurt, the left tackle. Probably not going to happen there either. I guess the point of this whole thing is the 49ers are in disarray. They basically mailed in the season. Who knows what's going to happen with them moving forward? They're probably the Tampa Bay Buccaneers of last year. Let's just lose every game and get the number one pick. And is Paxton Lynch the guy? Is it Connor Cook? Whoever it is, that's the guy we're taking. But just think Denver, or at least a rumor about getting Joe Thomas. Don't think it will happen. But look, Denver, they might as well go for broke here because, I mean, Peyton Manning looked pretty good in that game. And they're 7-0, and it looks like they're going back to the playoffs, winning their division. Why not?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think that I didn't think they'd do what they did to Green Bay, and obviously their defense is excellent. And like you said, if he starts coming around and they've kind of made the adjustments they need to make so everybody's happy in the offense, and then you go to pick up somebody like Vernon Davis, who Peyton can make look good, and keep him, you know, involved in the game and that stuff. He never seemed to always be the focal point in San Francisco, which never made much sense. But But how's all that in San Francisco working out? All of that, let's taking breaks every 20 minutes in training camp so the guys could go check their phones because they didn't want them to be away from social media. Do you hear about all this stuff that's coming out? They had a guy from Cal, I guess, or Stanford, come to the team and say that, you know, 20-somethings, you know, millennials as they're called, need to have this, and this is, you know, it'll keep them more focused if you let them go their phones and be updated on things that are going on, so they won't be distracted thinking about what they're missing. So every 20 minutes during training camp, they gave them a break to go look at their phones. I'm sure that went over really well with the over 25 crowd that's there to win a championship. All these kids run into their Instagram accounts and taking selfies every 20 minutes in training camp. I can imagine Parcells and Belichick and Coughlin getting that suggestion from somebody, and how quickly they would have been out of the building.
Yeah, that you know, it is interesting. Again, I think it goes back to Trent Baalke, what a terrible job he's done, losing Jim Harbaugh. I mean, Jim Harbaugh, we mentioned about it, Michigan, the job he's done there. I know the Michigan State game. I mean, what a disaster that was. But he's done a nice job at Michigan. This guy's been a success Kaepernick had his success under Jim Harbaugh. Now he's gone. Now look at what's happening to this guy. And you're right. That's ridiculous. Here's something interesting, though, quickly, Joe. You know, I've had a chance to cover a few games for the Jets and go into the locker room afterwards. Mm-hmm. And while I don't agree with this policy at all, you're 100% right. When these guys get in the locker room, the first thing they do is they jump on their phone.
Mm-hmm.
They jump on their phone. When you go up to do interviews with them, they're on their phone checking whatever they're checking. This is just the world we live in. But I agree with you. Look, you're there to focus on football. You're paid. You're paid to play football. And when you go to your job, you're not paid to, I mean, maybe you try to sneak it, but, you know, unfortunately, you only have a certain limited amount of practice time. You should really be focusing on your practice. You know what? Do your Facebook after practice on your own free time.
Or hire somebody to do it for you.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely hire somebody. But a couple of trade rumors still floating out there. Right now we're doing this a couple hours before the trade deadline. Quickly, before we get back to the injuries and get on to Dallas, we want to talk about Dallas a little bit specifically. Belichick's not one to make some maneuvers as a trade deadline. And the Patriots are rumored to be maybe looking at Jason McCourty. Now, the Tennessee Titans fired their coach, Ken Wisenhunt. Now they're, right. They're what, 1-6? Let me just double check. Yes, 1-6. So they're going nowhere fast. Mike Mularkey has taken over. He was the coach at Jacksonville, 16-32 record when he was with Jacksonville. He was a coach at Buffalo for a year, 9-7. He'll be taking over for Wisenhunt. Again, interim coach, who knows what's going to happen with them moving forward. But they could be looking to have a little bit of a yard sale. Jason McCourty has been thrown out there, who's the brother of Devin McCourty, who's the safety on the Patriots. They could use some help there. Also, the Patriots could use some help on their offensive line. They really are banged up. They lost their left tackle, Nate Solder, for the year. Brian Stork, their center, has been out on injured reserve designated for return. They've had an undrafted rookie playing center there. They lost Trey Jackson, who is a rookie guard who was playing. They lost him at knee injury. It's kind of week to week, but they're a little banged up on their line. So that might be two areas where they look. Wouldn't surprise me if Belichick tried to pull out a deal right before the end of the trade deadline, because again, the Patriots, look at them. They're 7-0. They're going to 8-0. They're playing Washington this week. Let's not even discuss that game. So they're going to win their division. I mean, let's face it. The Jets are out of contention for the division now at 4-3. So would it surprise you if Belichick made that kind of move at the trade deadline? Certainly wouldn't surprise me.
No, not at all. He's, like you said, this is the time where you look at exactly what we're going to do. These are what teams are doing, right? They're going to take these, they're going to look at where they stand at this point. You're about halfway through the season, and you're going to start to say, you know, what can we do to ensure that we keep going forward and that we address our, whatever weaknesses we perceive we have. And, only those guys know, after a little self-scout, as they call it, you know, to go back and look at where they need to improve. And guys like John Elway and Belichick and the better guys in the league that are now look at themselves and say, hey, we have a chance here. Let's make sure we don't screw it up. It's interesting. So I wouldn't be shocked if those guys or any of those guys make a move. It certainly makes sense.
Yeah, we'll in a couple hours we'll know for sure. Like I said, the one trade has been made, Vernon Davis at Denver. Maybe Denver, maybe not finished. We'll have to wait and see. But let's get into some back to the injuries, because we kind of have a big ball of wax with this one. It kind of flows into some other stories regarding this team. And right now it looks like Tony Romo will likely be coming back week 11 when they play the Miami Dolphins. That's at least what has been said publicly. You know, that's kind of the game plan. Again, we'll see if that ends up working out or not. That would be good for Dallas, because they certainly could use him. Their offense has been pretty much putrid. Matt Castle has been terrible. You know, in that Giant game, Joe, that you watched, that Matt Castle certainly was maybe the Giants' MVP in that game, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, throwing three interceptions on four series, that one of them for a touchdown, certainly helped us, you know, stay in that game and then ultimately win that game. He's been awful. I watched the game. I get, you know, Mr. Wonderful, Greg Hardy, had an interception of Russell Wilson on the 20-yard line, on the Seattle 20-yard line, and got it down to the 16, and they wound up kicking a field goal. And they wound up losing the game by whatever, 1 point. So just their offense has been awful. They obviously need – and, you know, as somebody said today, to get Tony Romo back, they could be the best team in the division, because the division stinks. So, you know, you're going to – somebody's going to have to get a 3- or 4-game lead on them, which is possible, to get about a 3-game lead on them by Thanksgiving, and then hope you can hold on and, you know, see where the head-to-head games are and those types of things. But they're definitely going to be prepared to make that run of the last 5 games, December to January, because the season ends January 3rd this year. So they're going to get ready to make that run, and we'll see where it takes them. Obviously, they're having some issues, internal issues. They released Joseph Randall today, so now they're down to one veteran running back and one rookie running back, and who knows, McFadden's going to stay healthy. So they're kind of putting, you know, they're trying to hold on until he comes back, and then they hope that they have enough to go from there.
Yeah, we'll get into Randall in a minute, a little bit more about his story. Just want to go over their schedule. This week they play the Eagles at home, and look, I mean, as you know, looking at it from your perspective as a Giants fan, I mean, I know you're going to Tampa Bay. Obviously, Tampa Bay's better than they were. You can't just chalk up a W anymore. They're 3-4. Yeah. They could easily be 4-3, having a winning record with a rookie quarterback. And you're going there, correct? Are you going to Tampa Bay?
Yes.
You're going to Tampa Bay. So not a gimme. You certainly would think you would give the Giants the edge there in that game. But you know, the Eagles are 3-4 right now. Dallas is 2-5. So one of them is going to win. And obviously, if Philadelphia wins that game, they're going to be 2-6. Dallas is really going to be struggling down the stretch here. Then they actually go play Tampa Bay. Miami is when they're expecting Romo back. They're home against Carolina, at Washington, at Green Bay, home against the Jets, at Buffalo, home against Washington. So, I mean, they got to win at least one of these next two games before Romo comes back, I think, to have a shot at it. I don't know if down the stretch there, even if Romo comes back, if they could put enough wins together to win the division, given the fact that everybody kind of plays each other and we'll move up. We'll have to wait and see what happens with that. But why don't we get into it? You talked a little about Greg Hardy a little bit, and you talked about Joseph Randall. Now, Joseph Randall has had a number of off-the-field issues. He, am I correct, Joe? Refresh my memory. He was the one who was the shoplifter, correct?
Yes. After he signed his contract, he went and picked up some CDs or something, because he didn't think he had to pay for them. So.
Yeah, so he shoplifted. He's had some issues with some domestic issues, which never really turned anything in the legal process, but he was looking to maybe be suspended under the personal conduct policy. He was being held out of practice for personal reasons. And I'm just going to read this right here from Jerry Jones. He said, Jerry Jones said the team would remain patient with Randall while expressing concern for the back's mental health. However, he was released today. Now, here's a couple things to just look at, and I haven't seen anything to this effect. He was waived. That's what they said, he was waived, which means basically he's just released. Now, he did have an abdomen issue, an injury. He wasn't waived injured, which means he would end up back on injured reserve and he would be getting paid. As far as I know, again, that could change. Sometimes the reporting comes out and maybe he was waived injured. But as far as I know, he was just strictly released from the team. I don't know Jerry Jones, I guess he's not a man of his word. I don't understand if they're really that concerned about him. Maybe they could have done things a little bit differently, but they basically just said goodbye. But here's a guy, Greg Hardy, that you're talking about, who has these issues on the sideline, who has these domestic issues. He gets suspended for 4 games. But you know what? They're like, oh, that's kind of good. I'm kind of confused here. Maybe you can help me out. You know the Cowboys better than I do. Is this kind of the way they just do business?
This is, and I thought that they were changing a little bit under, with Stephen Jones being a little bit more in charge than Jerry is. But I think that they made such a big push that this was their year. And we agreed in the beginning of the season, before Romo got hurt, that this was their year, that this was finally they were going to bring the trophy back. You know, they had the offense that they needed. The defense was good. They fixed all their problems. And all of a sudden, Dez Bryant goes down. And you say, okay, well, we didn't really keep enough wide receivers because all we kept was Cole Beasley and let everybody else go. But we can make it through, and he's going to come back in 2 weeks or maybe 4 weeks. And, of course, it took him the 7 weeks to come back that everybody thought it was going to take him. And then Romo goes down. And I think they're under so much pressure at this point to keep this thing going. And, again, the Redskins, the Eagles, and the Giants are doing them a favor by hanging around. And if they, after losing 5 in a row, they're still 1 game back in the loss column.
Yeah.
So you're going to keep pushing, and you're going to make these decisions and say, Joseph Randall wasn't that good as it was. They couldn't just put anybody back there after DeMarco Murray left like they thought they could. McFadden had a great game against the Giants. He had a decent game against Seattle. They figure this is going to be the guy anyway. We like the rookie Michael, and that's where they're going to go. So they just cut him, and they figured let's do away with it. Again, if Greg Hardy starts taking penalties and starts doing stupid things or he gets hurt, he's going to be out the door too. The fact that he has three sacks and an interception in 3 games lets him scream at assistant coaches and throw things around the room and yell at his teammates. They don't mind that chaos there. It seems to always be that chaos on the Cowboys sideline. Seems to always be that way with them. They enjoy it. And I'd like to give Jason Garrett a little bit of, heck for being this way. But the problem is he's not really in charge there. That family is in charge. And they don't leave him up to do much. So he's not going to make a big deal about Greg Hardy attacking one of his coaches, and he's not going to go over there and stop it. He's not going to tell Dez Bryant to shut up and sit down and listen to you stuff. He just can't because he doesn't run the show. He's just an employee, and he's there to coach. And he's figured that out, that that's how he keeps his job. And that's fine. A lot of guys can do that. Even in regular jobs, there's a lot of guys, Dennis, you probably know a few like I do, that will do whatever they're told to do, if that's what's going to keep their job, whether they can live with themselves or not. And that's the situation that, Jason is in. He knows it's not right, a lot of the stuff that's going on. But he's not running the team. He's there to do his job. He's there to coach, and that's it. So I think they enjoy the chaos. I think they like to kind of stick it in people's face that we can be this way and we're going to be the best. And they like the swagger. They like the whole bit. But you just lost 5 games in a row. If you lose 6, and like you said, Dennis, you get Tampa Bay and Miami back-to-back in Florida. If you lose one of those 2 games, all of a sudden you're staring at least 8 losses because you're playing Carolina and you're playing Green Bay.
Yeah,
so
in Green Bay.
If suddenly you get to a point where you can only win 7 games, no matter who comes back, that's going to put you in a tough position. And do you really want to be celebrating the, a division win at 7-9? I don't know if that's the banner I want to be raising over the stadium, but I'm sure they'll make a big deal about it if that's what happens. But it's possible this year. There's 2 divisions this year that someone's going to win with a losing record, almost guaranteed, or a 500 record. So we can talk about that too.
Yeah, we're going to get into that in a minute. I just want to kind of do a little housekeeping here, clean up one thing. Jason Pierre-Paul, we discussed last week quickly, did kind of finalize his contract. We'll get his base salary is a little bit higher, about double what I thought it would be. I thought they'd give him his minimum. But basically, without kind of nutshelling it, they gave him a lot of incentives, which we knew they would. These are likely to be earned incentives given the fact that he played all of last year. That doesn't mean he's going to earn them all. Okay, so the Giants will get a credit back. Right now he's costing about $7 million on the cap. he probably won't earn all these incentives. I doubt them. One of them is 10 sacks. Think he's going to have 10 sacks in seven games when he gets on the field? Probably not, but maybe. Look, if he does, great. He gets a $5 million bonus.
Hey, I'll pay him if he gets 10 sacks.
Yeah, they'll gladly pay him the $5 million plus bonus if he gets 10 sacks. But you know what? He is on the exempt list. He's getting paid. And if he's almost no matter what, he's going to make close to $1 million this year. Again, when he's active for games, as long as he's active, he's going to make a little over $200,000. His snap counts, those kind of things. This was the best scenario for both sides. Makes sense for both sides. Jason Pierre-Paul had to be fair to the Giants. The Giants were fair to him. They basically gave him an opportunity to make as much money as he would have made if he had walked in the door under the franchise tag and he meets all his incentives. Is he going to make them all? Probably not. But at least there's an opportunity for him to make the money that he was going to make. And I have to give the Giants all the credit in the world here and maybe take a little bit back from Jason Pierre-Paul. Some of the stuff that's coming out now and his agent maybe finally coming to the realization that, hey, this is the best for both of us moving forward. And that's good to see that that was worked out in that manner.
Yeah, and he's done all the right things since he's been back. The only thing I think people didn't like, or at least the media didn't like, we should talk to Ralph about this, Ralph Facchiano, is they asked him if he could tell the story about what happened. And he said, I'm going to tell it to one person. That person will be able to tell the story. He said, I just haven't decided who that's going to be yet. So he's not giving out any details, and I guess he wants to formulate the story in a certain way and give it as an exclusive and maybe try to get paid for it or whatever. Who cares? But he said all the right things. He said, look, I don't want to come back till I'm ready. Coaches will let me know when I'm ready. The medical people will let me know when I'm ready. I want to, when I get back on the field, I want to play for the rest of the year. They talked to him about going down to New Orleans on the trip, and he said, I don't want to be a distraction. He said, you know, everyone's going to want to ask me questions and be around me. I want it to be about the team. So he stayed home. So all the right things, all the opposite things that a Dallas Cowboy would do. And I think you're going to see him on the field against Tampa Bay, at least for 8 to 12 plays. They're going to figure out the old NASCAR package. They're going to figure out some third down plays to stick him in there, see how he's doing, and then you'll see him chasing Tom Brady around the next week.
All right, well, let's hope that happens, and, let's hope that he can be effective and come back and still have a career moving forward, and it's good to see that things are moving in a positive direction. So Joe and I are going to kind of go over what's the playoff races, kind of some things that we had said earlier in the year. Somebody will have to eat some crow. That would be me. But let's take a look, Joe. Let's take a look at the AFC first, and you kind of mentioned this already. Look, the AFC East, New England's going to win the division. They're going to 8-0. They're going to beat the Redskins. They've got some issues moving forward, but again, they somehow or another manage to just keep winning no matter what happens. I mean, injuries, lost linemen, it doesn't matter. They're an elite team. They have elite talent. They can beat you a lot of different ways. And to have an elite quarterback and elite coach, that's what I'm saying about New England. You had mentioned a few weeks ago that we thought there were two elite teams in this league. We may want to revise that a little bit and start putting some of these other guys in that elite status. But New England's going to win that division. But right now, as far as a wild card, you have my New York Jets sitting at 4-3 after two straight road losses and really a brutal performance out in Oakland. You got Buffalo coming off a bye week. They're 3-4, and so is Miami. But they're both playing each other this week coming up. This is a big game because if the Bills win, and Cameron Wake got hurt in that game against the Patriots, which both of us thought the Dolphins would be very competitive in, which they weren't. But this is a big game for the Bills, and here's why. They win that game, they go to 4-4. They play the Jets on Thursday night. So the Jets have two home games very close on the 8th and then on the 12th. They play Jacksonville on the 8th and then Buffalo on the 12th. So who knows whether they're going to beat Jacksonville or not. Their quarterback situation's up in the air. I'm not even going to make a prediction. But regardless, even if Buffalo loses, it will still be a big game for them, Rex coming back. But if they win, they go to 4-4, no matter what happens with the Jets. Let's say the Jets beat Jacksonville. 5-3 versus 4-4 with Rex coming back. Forget about Rex coming back. This is a big game for playoff positioning right there. So these next two games for the Jets and Bills are very important because I do think even though Dan Campbell's done a nice job with Miami, their offensive line, I don't think it's just good enough to hold up for the whole season.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Again, going through this, you kind of look – it's kind of odd how you look at this and you say you've got three division winners pretty much locked up in the AFC. Right, you've got the Broncos, you've got the Bengals, and you've got the Patriots. And then you just start to write down these other teams' names. Like I said, you have the Jets, the Bills, the Dolphins, because they're all pretty close. And again, this is before they play each other this week, so that'll make a big determination. And then the Steelers, the Raiders, and believe it or not, the Kansas City Chiefs are all kind of still alive in the wild card race, because that AFC South, you're only going to get that one team, whether it's the Jaguars, the Texans, the Colts to win the division. That's all that's going from there. The wild card's not going to come from the AFC South. So you've really got six teams now vying for two spots in the AFC for the last 8 weeks, and or 9 weeks, and it's really going to be a dogfight between those teams. And I think, like you said, there's interesting matchups that now you look at and you say Bills and Dolphins, and then Bills have to play the Jets, and there's all kinds of different scenarios that you could go through here that'll keep it very, very interesting in the AFC for all the wild card spots. Again, neither one of us picked the Broncos. I know that part. I know I picked Cincinnati and I picked the Patriots. And I guess I must have picked Indianapolis in the South. You have it written down somewhere. I know that. So we weren't that far off in the AFC, except for neither one of us thought the Broncos were going to be this good.
Yeah, I think we thought, I mean, look, and Peyton had taken a step back, except for the last game he played. He had taken a little bit of a step back. They're really winning on the strength of their defense. They put a total team effort in against, obviously, another elite team from the NFC. It could be a Super Bowl matchup for all we know. Mm-hmm. They did play at home. You know, Green Bay doesn't play as well on the road, but still, you had two talented defenses, two talented offenses. You would thought, maybe looking at it objectively, Aaron Rodgers is the better quarterback right at that particular time, but certainly he was under siege. Let's put it that way. I don't think it was that Aaron Rodgers necessarily played a bad game. Give Denver's defense all the credit in the world. They were in his face that whole game. But, you know, look, the Oakland Raiders had a tiebreaker against the Jets because they just beat them. I mean, the Oakland Raiders have been irrelevant forever. And, you know, again, Kansas City, they're back in the conversation after that whooping they put on the Detroit Lions. They're back in the conversation. These teams play each other. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I predicted to come in last in the division. I don't know if that's going to happen now, but would it surprise me if they came in third? No, I think the Bills are a threat to the Jets. I still believe this, and let me take a look at their schedule, Pittsburgh. They got a big game coming up this week. I know they lost Le'Veon Bell, we mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. Oakland is playing at Pittsburgh. So, and then they play Cleveland, and they get a bye, which they need. Then they play at Seattle. That's a tough game. Indianapolis comes there. They go to Cincinnati. Denver comes there. They play at Baltimore and at Cleveland. So you're looking at, you know, so a mixed bag there. I still think, you know, Pittsburgh is a team that historically down the stretch plays well. They got a lot of veterans on that team. Roethlisberger's back healthy. I still think that Pittsburgh's going to find a way in there. I still believe that. You know, maybe go 5-3 down the stretch or 6-2. I could see that happening with them. You're right about, you know, the AFC South, oddly enough, Joe, isn't it what the NFC South was last year?
Yeah, exactly. And what we thought it was, boy, did we miss on that one. We thought that was going to be the bad division. Obviously, we mixed up our A's and our N's. Because that was pretty obvious that we missed out on that one. You get two undefeated teams in the other, or close to it, in the NFC South. But, yeah, the AFC South is just a disaster. And like we said before, there's going to be a team that goes to the playoffs with a losing record. It's going to come out of that division. And, you know, but again, only one team's coming. And it's embarrassing for the Texans to still be in the conversation. But the Colts without Andrew Luck are nothing. And, you know, that's what they are. They're Houston. Houston doesn't have a quarterback either. So Indianapolis without a quarterback, it's the exact same team. Andrew Luck makes the difference there. And he's not healthy and he can't play well. They're just not going to be contenders. But, again, they play in the weakest – what's turning into the weakest division in football.
You know, the strange thing is that, you know, Jacksonville comes in at 2-5. You know what? If they win – I mean, I think Indianapolis is off this week. So if they win, they're going to be tied.
Yep.
Yeah, they're going to be tied. They're going to be tied for – I mean, you would think a 2-5 team would come in and maybe mail it in a little bit. But they're going to be tied. They're going to say, hey, why not us? Well,
yep.
Why not? Why can't we win 7 games and win this division? One thing about the Colts, two things I'll mention. They've done a really poor job of putting a good offensive line around Andrew Luck. I mean, They've done a terrible job of that, of protecting their franchise, number one. And the other thing is, is Chuck Pagano going to survive if they lose another game? You think he might be the next guy out the door?
No, I think because of luck and his injuries and all that stuff, I think that he gets the 1 year pass. I don't think it's not like he has a healthy Andrew Luck and they're putting up all these points and he can't figure out how to get the thing to work or anything. So I don't think it's his fault. And I think he gets a bye here. I know Irsay's not the easiest guy to work for, but I think he gets 1 year grace here because the quarterback's hurt.
Yeah, I'm just looking. The Colts are 3-0 in the division, and they've historically feasted on their own division. So that's why, again, they're probably talent-wise the best team. They got the best quarterback. You always look at that, Tennessee. So they got three more games remaining in the division. Jacksonville and Tennessee have only played two in the division. Houston has played three. So, you know, that's what's kind of maybe in my mind why they're going to end up winning it. They'll win all the tiebreaker scenarios, that kind of right. thing. And, again, Jacksonville, I think Jacksonville, from a young, talented team that maybe still needs a few more pieces, but you know what? Again, Blake Bortles, is he improving? Do they have some weapons? Yeah, I'm concerned about this game for a lot of reasons with them coming into MetLife. The fact that maybe we'll be starting a rookie, Bryce Petty, fourth-round draft pick, because we have no healthy quarterbacks. And you know what? Jacksonville's going to come in hungry, and they're coming off a bye week. So This is not exactly a gimme game for the Jets. And maybe you looked early in the schedule and said, oh, yeah, gimme game. Well, Jacksonville's got two wins. Their two wins came over AFC East opponents. So wouldn't put it past them to put a real good effort on this week. But you're right. The AFC South will probably get one of those seven-win teams in. The rest of them, it's going to be a dogfight. Like I said, I still think Pittsburgh makes it. I think it's between the Jets, Buffalo, and probably Oakland. Again, Oakland the next couple of weeks. We'll see what happens with Kansas City if they keep themselves relevant. But you're right. The three divisions are pretty much locked up there. The South is not getting a wild card team, so you're looking at that kind of scenario for the wild card right now, and you're starting to get some separation. And another couple of weeks, you're definitely going to have. And I'm trying to look on the schedule here and see. Well, I mentioned Dolphins, Bills. That will be a big one, and I don't really see any other AFC. Raiders, Steelers. Raiders, Steelers will be a big one. So
yeah, I think if you wrote it down now, which I did, your wild card. To get the two wild cards, it's going to be Jets, Bills, Dolphins, Steelers, Raiders, Chiefs.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm going with in the AFC.
Yep. You know, it's interesting, before we go on to the NFC, is last year when they put up the NFC, the in the hunt, they had like the Buccaneers at like, one and eight or, whatever the heck they were in the hunt, The Carolina Panthers, 3-7 in the hunt. And that's what you got here. You might as well put Tennessee in there in the hunt at 1-6. They're in the hunt, right? Because they're only two games behind.
They're only two games back, right?
Yeah, you got to look at that. You got to laugh a little bit, because that's what happened exactly last year with the NFC South, which is much, much better this year. But why don't we move on to the NFC? And maybe we'll hold off the NFC East just because that's your domain, and we've talked about them a little bit. But, look, Green Bay finally lost a game. Give all the credit in the world to Denver. I mean, you knew they probably weren't going undefeated, but Green Bay still is an elite team. They play great at home. They're 6-1. But the team right behind them, a team that we both liked, and this is when we both got right.
Yep.
Two in this division, we got right. Neither of us liked the Lions. Now, we didn't think they were going to be 1-7. I didn't think that. But I thought they were out of the playoff. I thought they were going to be like 7-9, something like that. I think we both agreed that they were going to be maybe one of those teams that were in the playoffs last year and would drop out. And they dropped like a stone. The Vikings was a team that we both liked. And they sit now at 5-2. They came off back-to-back road wins. And, their defense is pretty good. They get up after the quarterback. They're pretty solid. Now, who are they playing? Are they in a bye this week? No, I don't believe so. Let me check. Let's try to see who they're playing here. And I'll figure it out. But just go ahead. You tell me what you think about that division so far. Because, really, the Vikings are one game behind Green Bay. I think Green Bay ultimately wins it. But, give kudos to the Vikings for being in the hunt for the division, even with only seven games played.
Yeah, they play St. Louis this week. And they're also 3-0 in the division. So, that's a big help if they wind up getting, tying with Green Bay, or if they somehow wind up, ahead of Green Bay. Being 3-0 in the division already is big. And what it does is, and this is the opposite, Dennis, right? If you look at the NFC, because the Vikings and the Packers are so close and the Falcons and the Panthers are so close, those might be division champions / wild card winners right there. And you may not, you may only get one from the West and one from the East. So that really puts the pressure on those other teams to try to stay in the hunt, because if Minnesota keeps winning and the Packers keep winning, they're going to be division champion / wild card. And then you got the Panthers at 7-0 and Falcons at 6-2. They're going to be division champion / wild card, one of those two teams. So I think it really puts a lot of pressure on the rest of the NFC to make a move here and to get as many as you can, or to, again, in those poor divisions, the East and the West, to make sure that you win your division.
Yeah, definitely. Now, the Falcons are playing at the 49ers, and we already talked about what a train wreck they are. So I know the Falcons just blew a game to Tampa Bay. They are 6-2 right now, and you know, could easily go to 7-2. But you're right. Looking at it right now, that would probably be the most likely scenario. I mean, let's get in the NFC East before we get in the NFC West, because that's right in your wheelhouse. Find it very hard to believe, like you just said, that two teams would emerge from the NFC East. This one might be – I don't think that a losing record will win this division, but 8-8?
8-8, yeah.
8-8 or 9-7 at best, maybe? I mean, I really don't see any of these teams here. They're all flawed in some ways. And, yeah, okay, I think you would agree that if the Cowboys have been healthy, but you know what? It is what it is. We discussed this every time we made a kind of a prediction, we always kind of had this little caveat, barring injury. Well,
yeah.
Unfortunately, injuries happen, and you got to try to work your way through it. Now, Dallas, I mean, could they be 3-4? Sure, they could be 3-4, and they'd be much better shape, but they're not. They are what they are. So I'm saying 8-8. If somebody gets the 9 wins in this division, they're going to win it. I don't know if you agree with that. I want to get your opinion on that, but that's what I feel.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I was just going over the Giants' schedule and doing the same thing, you know, that fans do, and you start looking at them and possibilities, and, you know, if you lose here and you win here and those types of things, and you come up with 8, and then that's why you look at Dallas and you say, okay, if you lose this week, or if you lose, you know, yeah, let's say you lose this week to Philadelphia, that's 6 losses already. Then you can only lose 2 the rest of the way. So you're going to have to go 5-2 to get to 9 wins to maybe get to, you know, to get tied for a division lead. But so, you know, the way I see the NFC, you know, you've got the Redskins, Eagles, Cowboys, and Giants all fighting for the division, and that's it. No one's getting a wild card out of that group. And then you've got on the bottom side, on the west side, you've got Arizona, the Rams, and the Seahawks, and the same thing. They're probably only going to get one team fighting for the division. And then it's Packers, Vikings, Panthers, Falcons. And so it's pretty cut and dried that you need to win your division. And really the only two divisions that are up for grabs that aren't between two specific teams, you know, it's the entire NFC East and 3 out of the 4 teams in the West. So I don't think it's going to be a losing record. Because I think somebody will win a few games. It might be the Eagles. It might even be the Redskins, which I can't imagine. But at least at that point, you know, you're looking at 9 games left for the bottom teams and 8 for the Giants. And you've already got 4 losses. So, it, you know, it's very difficult. I don't see you getting – I don't see anybody going 10-6. I don't see the Eagles going 7-2 the rest of the way. It just doesn't seem possible with the record that they have and with the schedule that they have. So, you know, let's look at them for instance. They play Dallas, and they play Miami and Tampa Bay. For some reason, Eagles and Cowboys get those switched games, Miami and Tampa Bay back-to-back. They play Detroit, and then New England, Buffalo, Arizona, Washington, and the Giants. Could they win 7 of those games? Yeah, probably. You know, it's possible. But very difficult, and I don't think Washington will do it. I don't think they're strong enough at quarterback to win. You know, they get New England, then they get New Orleans, then they get Carolina in the next 3 weeks. And then they get the Giants in Dallas. So the next 5 weeks, we're going to know where the Redskins are, that's for sure. They could be 3-9 very quickly. But that's, you know, they have the little bit tougher schedule. Looking there. So I think it's between the Cowboys, the Giants, and the Eagles. And the Eagles may have the easier schedule out of everybody coming in, because they don't have to play the Jets, and they don't have to go to Green Bay like Dallas does. So, and they don't have, you know, they both have Carolina. So I don't know, going to be interesting. But that's, I think you've got your wild card teams already, though. I think you've got either Vikings, Packers, or Falcons, Panthers. Whoever doesn't win those divisions are going to be the wild cards. And so that's, to me, that's kind of off the table. And now you've got to win your division in the East and the West.
Well, what about this, Joe, just quickly, just to throw a little wrench in the works. You said the Rams are playing the Vikings. Yep. What if the Rams win that game? They go to 5-3, and the Vikings fall to 5-3.
Right.
So wouldn't that put the Rams back in the conversation?
Well,
this is a big game for both of them.
Yeah, it puts the Rams back in the conversation, but that's what I'm saying for the division, though. I still think they need to win the division because I don't know. I just don't know. I think that's where it's going to come down to. That's just my feeling that they're going to fight more against the Packers. Minnesota is, even though they have a very tough schedule, I think that's where they're going to hang their hat. I think they're going to try to overtake the Packers, and they'll wind up with that wild card by doing that. I don't think St. Louis can overtake them. I don't think they're as good. I don't think Nick Foles is as good as he needs to be. And again, just a feeling. I think we both think Minnesota's on the rise, and that's I think this is their turn. So they could fall apart too. Now that I said that, they could win. They could lose. they could line up at 8-8 very quickly. But
yeah, all we know about the only certainty in the NFL is uncertainty.
Exactly.
I do agree with you in most respects here. I do think that. While Minnesota, we both like them. They're 5-2. This is a big game for them. Again, mm-hmm. this is one that creates that separation. St. Louis
right.
loses this game. They go to 4-4, and Minnesota goes to 6-2. Now
right.
you can almost say that, well, oh, not only is Minnesota really in the hunt for the division, they're really almost solidifying themselves as a wild card.
Right.
And again,
right.
the thing with the Falcons is their division. I mean, how many division games have they played? They've only
they're
played
two. In the
two.
Division.
They're 0-2 in the division, but they've only played two. So I don't remember who they played. I know they played New Orleans. They lost to Tampa Bay. They just lost to them. Oh, they lost to New Orleans. They lost to those
right.
two teams. So they get them again. Maybe they get them. So, yeah, you know, can I see Atlanta getting 10 games out of that? Yeah, I think Atlanta's probably going to end up being good enough to squeeze their way in there. I just wonder about that last spot in Minnesota. They played very well. They got a very talented defense. And I just wonder, the NFC West – Seattle, I know they have their issues. The Rams, they don't have a great offense. Would I be shocked if somebody started to move up the ladder a little bit and at least make themselves relevant to challenge somebody for a wild card? I think that's going to happen, but I kind of agree with you in the long run that there will only be one out of the West. In the long run, there will only be one out of the West. But I do think it will get a little – I like to call it the accordion effect. In or out, you know,
they'll get squeezed
in, and then all of a sudden, after 1 week, and then you kind of reshuffle the deck. That's usually what happens. Let's take a look here. One more game that we want to highlight, kind of finish up going into this week, which is the Packers are going on the road again. Now they're 6-1, no longer undefeated. Packers are playing at the Carolina Panthers, who won last night in a thrilling game in overtime. Right, that game was an overtime winner, yes, and in a pouring rainstorm. Panthers are undefeated, but that's obviously, look, coming off a Monday night game, an emotional game, shorter week. I know the Panthers get to stay at home, but that's got to be one that you got to circle on your calendar as one to watch, an early game, and going to be pretty exciting to watch that one, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, no, I think I didn't get a chance to watch the game last night.
Mm-hmm.
I was out. But, you know, these are all going to be – these are pretty fantastic games coming up in the next couple of weeks. There are some really, really – as you look through the schedule, there are some really, really good games coming up against teams that we didn't think would be there, like Carolina. But, yeah, Green Bay at Carolina is going to make it tough on Green Bay. Like you said, they don't travel well sometimes. You know, their defense showed a few holes in. I know it was against Peyton Manning, and he looked pretty good for the first time this year. But they didn't look all that great. And Carolina's got a great defense, so I think that's a fantastic game to watch. There's a couple other ones on the schedule that are that are pretty amazing. So I think that's going to be, again, another one of those telling games. If Carolina loses, it brings Atlanta back into the division shot there. And, you know, after losing a couple of games, and you know, if the Packers lose, it brings the Vikings back in if they're able to win. Lots of great storylines, Dennis. Really, really fun time of year when it's this close. When there's really a few teams run away with it, as we say. But other than that, everybody's pretty closely packed, pretty tightly packed in there.
Yeah, you know what? And just to kind of finish up with this, with both our teams, they're very close in record. The Jets have played one less game than the Giants. They have the bye week coming up down the road a little bit. But one thing about the league, and, you know, Ralph Facchiano, we had on a few weeks back, you know, Giants beat reporter, made a very good point, and it's very, very pertinent, that there's a few elite teams in the league, a few. We said there were two. Maybe now you're starting to see maybe a couple more emerge. And a few dregs, a few terrible teams, you know, three, four, whatever you want to say. The rest are very tightly packed as far as talent-wise. And there's a fine line between victory and defeat. And I think you know this from last week. You know, one bad face-masking call, you know, or not kicking the ball, whatever it was, whatever you want to say about it, opened the door for you to lose a game that you very much could have won. And you had a lot of different ways to win it, a lot of different ways to lose it, and it came down right to the end there, to the last second, and boom, you lost. You might look back on that and say that was the game that cost us. Maybe it was the game against the Cowboys in the opening portion of the season. The same thing with the Jets and Giants. I think they're both kind of this. Right now, they're not elite teams. Doesn't mean that they can't make the playoffs. Doesn't mean that they can't make a push. But talent-wise, when they go up against anybody, you just can't chalk up a W. Doesn't mean that you don't think they're going to win, but you can't chalk up a W. And I like Minnesota. I think they're very talented, have a very bright future. I don't think they're an elite team in the league yet, like Green Bay, which is why I think that Green Bay ultimately will win that division. Even though they lost that game, they're still an elite team with an elite quarterback. And I know the defense showed some cracks and stuff like that. Look, you're going to get that. That's going to happen. But a lot of these teams we discussed for the wild card, especially in the AFC, more than the NFC, a lot of them, if you look on paper and you took their records away, you might say, boy, I have no idea. So that's one of the good things about this league is that the teams are very close talent-wise for the most part, and any team can beat any other team. So you know what? You always go in there and you say, I'm confident that the Jets, as long as they get a healthy quarterback, can beat Jacksonville. But am I 100% sure? Would I be shocked if you told me Jacksonville won? No. A lot of factors go into the game. Turnovers, penalties, bad special teams plays, as maybe the Dallas Cowboys could attest to. Those kind of things all make up for the excitement in the game. And you know what? Next week, I can't wait to see where the standings look, because you know we're taking a stab at it, but your guess is as good as mine.
Yeah, and like you said, you know, go back to the Giants, and you take this week's game and you take the Dallas game, you could be 6-2.
Yep.
And you're not even talking about who else can win the division. You know, they could very easily be 6-2 and be 3-1 in the division.
We'll start to see some separation. But, Joe, thank you very much for another wonderful episode. Got a lot of good information in there. Looking forward to the games this week and looking forward to getting another episode next week and analyzing what happened.
Well, thank you, Dennis. It's always a pleasure. And look forward to a lot of good games this week. And we'll talk to you next week.
All right, gang. Listen, if you want to follow us, we're on Twitter. I'm at PFVFE, and Joe is at Tufton. So for Dennis Agapito and Joe Tafaro, please join us next week for a wonderful episode of Pro Football View from the East.